the Chargers lead 29-28.
Well, we didn't come here to tie. We came here to win. So to me, it was a no-brainer.
Dale Arnold.
Boston, New York, Philly, they don't
because
care about
they
that.
Don't,
they got
they don't want to know what you know what's going on in Dubuque.
Rich Keefe.
I wasn't stellar after age 28.
Dale and Keefe, middays.
And what happens when you offer a harsh critique of a great player, unless you show up with 1,000 roses and a 50-layer cake, you're a hater.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Let's park on the 50-layer cake part for just a moment. Hello, everybody. And Keith is off today. A well-earned day to take a sit and have a nog.
Nah, it's all because of Spider-Man.
Play some video games. Yeah, he's probably going to catch that, too.
Is that open today?
Yep, opening day. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Does he know it's a cartoon?
I'm going to guess he does.
It's one of those almost graphic novel-looking things. You know, whatever.
Well, maybe that's where he is. I don't know where he is. It doesn't matter.
Yes,
it's up to him. He gets to do what he wants. And
we
I'm
get
happy
to make
for
fun
him.
Of him.
Well, that. there's that to be said. But Steve DiAzzi is here, and it's always fun to work with Steve and talk some football with you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Even better after watching that Thursday night game last night. There's been a whole ton of really good Thursday night football games this year.
It's funny you should say that because now Thursday night football is done for Fox.
Yeah.
Their Thursday night ratings are up 7% over last year, year to year, for Thursday night football. Last night did a 12-4 overnight, second best of the season. Last night's overnight was up 68% over week 15 last year.
Yeah.
Because they've had great matchups.
They really have, and I don't think anybody anticipated the Chargers being where they are right now, but this turned out to be a marquee matchup. There, I guess it was the latest meeting of 10-win teams since the Giants-Niners in 1990.
There wasn't a Patriots-Colts game that was 10-win teams? That I don't know how late in the season
it
was. So maybe
I thought the same thing because I thought I remembered something like that too. But, the NFL, I don't know if they stumbled on a great Thursday schedule, but they've had some tremendous games.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way when they were setting the schedule before the season that they would have predicted that Chiefs-Chargers would be what it was.
Agreed.
That the teams would be where they are. They do luck into some things. That's fine. Good for them.
That's fine.
Now, I get a kick out of Anthony Lynn, and I, like everybody else, applaud him. Good for him. Go for the win. Good for you.
Yeah.
Unless they failed. In which case, he'd be getting killed today.
Like Vrabel did when he went earlier in the season.
In London.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I'm sitting there watching it last night, and I don't even pay attention because I'm just assuming it's overtime. I was literally...
You know who else thought that? Philip Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
He said he was headed for the sideline because he thought they were going to kick the point. And,
yeah.
And Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
We didn't come here to tie. We came here to win. And... So, to me, it was a no-brainer.
Good for him.
It's no-brainer because you succeeded.
Yeah.
If you lose that critical game for them,
right?
You lose that thing by a point because you're going for two. Now, how much of it was, we didn't come here for a tie, we came here to win? That's all well and good. How much of it was, I don't dare put the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands again?
That was part of it, and I think part of it was, do they lose any ground if they lose that game? They still are number five seed.
Well, they've got a chance now to win the division.
Right.
And if they had lost, they probably wouldn't have had a chance.
Right. But if they lost that game, they're also still in the same position they were. So there was very little to be lost because they're going to be the fifth. They're in position now to be the number five seed. So now they have a better shot at being the number two seed or maybe even a one seed. Who knows what it is. But... Had they lost that game, they were still where they were. They're still going to be the five seed in the AFC. So when you look at it in those terms, maybe there was not a lot to lose by going for it. And I wonder if that became part of the thought process too. I wonder if that was, okay, we got
a lot to gain but nothing to lose, sort of thing.
Position-wise, not a lot to lose, really. I mean, you're still going to be, you lose that game, you're still the number five, I think. I'm pretty sure that's the way it works out. If the upside was tremendous, and how they made that happen, how you get that wide open, and that must have been one of those plays that they had tucked away that they knew was going to work, and somehow it did. And I applaud them for doing it, but I tell you what, I didn't even. I literally had stood up and I was on my way to the bathroom because I was thinking.
Getting ready for overtime.
I was thinking overtime. Let's settle in for some overtime. And I stopped in my tracks when I saw what they were doing.
Now, easy to do when you've got a guy who no one covers. The entire Chiefs defense just leaves him alone. They've got three defenders around a guy at the goal line.
Yep.
Nobody off in the flat, and he's all by himself. And as Williams is making a catch that even I could make,
right.
I think even I could hold on to that one, and they get the win, I'm thinking, damn, that Miami game feels worse now.
Oh, it does. It made you look at it and say.
And now you go, oh, come on.
Yep.
Think about if somebody makes a tackle in Miami Sunday, anybody. Right. And by the way, hate to say this, and you don't say it about the Patriots very often, awful lot of guys jogging, weren't there?
Yeah, or what happens in those situations, sometimes you're looking downfield and you figure, oh, he's got him. Oh, that guy's got him. And you don't even know you're letting up, but you kind of like, Van Noy's got him. Okay, we're good. And that's exactly what happened. But you're right. It looked like a couple of guys just assumed the play was made. And I don't care what Miami says. You don't practice that play a lot.
No.
You do not practice that play. You have much more important things to do with your limited practice time than that.
What's there to practice? It's basically if somebody's coming at you lateral it. If somebody's not coming at you run. I mean, there's not a.
Right.
It's not like they had a script. Okay, we're going to go here,
right.
And then you're going to lateral it to him over there,
and then your offensive lineman is going to be downfield 70 or 65 yards to give that last block. Yeah, that's what the plan is. No, it's bedlam. It's throw to lateral to the open man, and on the same side on the same account, you don't practice against that much. You just don't. It's just the. There's way too many more important things that actually come into play in the NFL than that play. That's a once-a-year thing, maybe, for an NFL team.
Once-10-year thing?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, to let them score is a once-in-10-year thing.
But now you look at it, now you look back on it, and now it just kicks the crap out of you because you're the top seed.
Yep.
You know, you do your job against the Dolphins.
Yep.
I thought there was a pretty good chance Kansas City was going to lose another game.
Yep.
Now I think there's a pretty good chance they're going to lose another one still.
Yep.
They've got to go to Seattle. Now, you know, you get past Seattle, they're going to be fine, but they've got to go to Seattle for their next game. And,
Seattle's feeling pretty good about themselves.
Yeah.
You know.
And playing better. And
yeah. Yeah. It kind of, especially when you go deeper into it and compound it with how bad the Patriots play on the road.
Ooh.
How terrible their defense is compared to what they do at home. If you have to go, is there a more hostile environment than, let's say, Kansas City and Seattle and even throw Denver in
there?
Didn't
look that hostile in the fourth quarter for the Chargers last night, did it?
They had it broken down, but that's also a team that plays there every year, too. So, you know, they're probably a little more accustomed to it than others. But
now, as a former defensive player in the NFL, you've got to help me out here. How can you be so different on the road than you are at home? And it can't just be crowd noise.
Yeah, because really?
Because for one thing, when you're on defense, the crowd's quieter.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to help the offense. They're not hooting and hollering. If the offense performed worse on the road, you sort of understand it. Defense, I don't get it.
And half the time, the Miami game is 50-50 Pats fans anyway. Pats fans, Miami fans. You know, everybody goes down there to go see the Patriots play. It's actually cheaper than scalping tickets at Gillette, but there's any number of reasons. Whether it's focus on tackling, whether it's the intensity that comes with a natural intensity of being at home, there's a little bit of an edge. Without even thinking about it, there's a little bit of an edge when you're playing at home. There's no real flat out excuse. It's not like there is Tennessee. That wasn't a very hostile environment. That was a ton of Patriots fans in Tennessee. You just look at the games that they lost. Detroit's never been known as a tough place to play. There's no rhyme or reason, and there's been different. One thing that you've noticed is that the number of guys around the ball trying to bring down the ball carrier is always more at Gillette for whatever reason. I have no idea what the reason is, but it seems like on these away games, there's one guy trying to make a tackle, or maybe two. You come to Gillette, there's two, three, four guys around the ball carrier, and that makes it much easier to play defense. I don't know exactly what it is, but you're right. It can't be a crowd noise scenario. It can't be just the hostile environment. It's just not the way it is.
We've got a whole big spreadsheet here in front of us that that we put together. Here's the simple facts, as simple as we can make them and not make your eyes glaze over. If the Patriots do go 3-0 the rest of the way, and if the Chiefs and Chargers each can lose another game, the Patriots will be the number one seed. Mm-hmm. But the Texans are also sort of in the mix, but Chiefs and Chargers are what you're worried about. If the Patriots and Chiefs end up tied for the AFC, Patriots get the tiebreaker because they beat them head-to-head.
Right.
If now, all of this is predicated on the Patriots have to win out. For them to have a chance to get the top seed in the AFC, which obviously gives you home field up through the AFC championship, all that stuff, they've got to win out, and that includes and starts with the game Sunday in Pittsburgh. And I feel better and better about that game by the minute.
Right.
I cannot remember the last time I saw a Patriots team with an injury report like I've seen this week.
Two weeks in a row, though. Full
participation, though. Right. This week, yeah. Full participation every day this week for every guy on the roster.
Right, right.
Not even a limited participation.
Yeah, and we said that early in the season when things weren't going as well as we thought they should. We say, tell me how healthy you are in December. Tell me what kind of football you're playing, and then we'll start talking about the playoffs. But in September and October, you don't know what your health scenario is going to be. You don't know how well you're going to be playing in December. You usually have a pretty good idea with the Patriots. They've been tremendous in September. But right now, despite what happened last week, right now the Patriots are as healthy as they've been all year.
You got to stay healthy, man.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I even think last week, I don't care about the numbers. I don't care about Brady's numbers. I looked at the way he was throwing the ball last week, and I thought he was throwing the ball better than he had all year.
First half, I thought that's as well as I've seen him throw the football, maybe in a couple of years. Right. That pass to Cordarrelle Patterson,
right?
First of all, was a humming fastball.
It was
perfectly placed. Perfectly timed. He can't throw a football better than that.
Right, right, and that's what I'm saying. I've said it for a number of weeks now. It doesn't look like he was throwing the ball like he has in the past. Still, puts him in the upper echelon of quarterbacks in the NFL because when you fall off from 100% to 95%, it might be noticeable because we see him every week and we watch him for the last 18, 19 years. We've seen it, so we can tell if there's a little bit of an unnecessary wobble on the football, or that it's not as precise a spot as it's been in the past. I mean, how many times have we talked about Brady putting the ball down and away so that the defender can't touch the ball, or putting it high and away so the linebacker trailing on the tight end can't get to the ball? We've seen him do that repeatedly. We haven't seen it as much this year. I thought we were seeing some of that in Miami, and I saw him throwing the ball better than I think he's thrown all year.
Second half, though, that changed.
Yes, it did, which is strange.
And it seems to me that it changed when he went down on the field, clutching at the knee brace, trying to get it straightened out. He got hit. He got hit pretty hard on the knee. He's had a knee problem anyway. Yeah. He did not throw the ball the same from that point on the rest of the game. Now, the fact that he's not even on the injury report this week, I find rather amazing.
Right.
Because I'm fairly certain he tweaked his knee on Sunday.
Yeah, it's hard. I've worn those knee braces before, and not the modern version of them, but they can twist a little bit and grab hold of the skin over a bone somewhere or whatever. I've seen that happen before, but you just don't know. And you wonder if there's a direct correlation between but he wasn't throwing terrible in the second half, just not as good as the first half. The first half was tremendous. And they put a little more pressure on him in the second half. The defense was letting Miami do things that they shouldn't let him do. And it was one of those scenarios where I think there was a fall off in the second half, but I don't think it was as drastic as that. And
they only scored 6 points in the second half. He didn't throw the ball as effectively in the second half.
Well, they tried to run the ball a little bit more too, and they were doing a number of different things.
By the way, that wasn't working very well
either. Working either. But again, comparatively speaking, I think the first half was the best he's thrown the ball. The second half wasn't as good as the first half. I think it was more in line with some of the other throwing he's been doing.
Is Patrick Mahomes the next big thing?
For now.
You don't think this is sustainable? Because it sure looks real to me.
Here's the difference.
Well, the left-handed passes, he should maybe stop with that.
He'll learn. He completed the first one he tried early in the year, and and now he thinks it's a thing. So there's two ways you look at Mahomes. One is he going to be one of these guys that puts up numbers and makes amazing plays? Yeah, he is. He's going to be that guy. As long as he stays healthy, he'll be doing that. Is he going to win championships? Now that brings into the equation a lot of other things. Your coaching staff, the players, the around you, the general manager, and the acquisition of players and drafting and all that. So far, so good, but to do it over a sustained period is a little bit different. It's nice to have some of the offensive weapons he has. It's nice that he's got a tremendous arm and can throw
on the run
from a half a dozen different angles. How about that one that he wrapped around the side of that the defensive line? He basically dropped his arm like he was a sidearm pitcher and threw it around the guy. I mean that's nothing that was coached. That was something that he discovered he could do in high school, and it was phenomenal. I mean, he literally reached around the guy to his right and threw it sidearm and made a good throw, a real good throw, slightly a hair behind, but who cares? It was a great play. Yes, he is going to be all that in terms of his numbers, his touchdowns, the excitement that he brings. Now you got to start talking, how do you win championships there? And
that defense better not implode like I saw them do in the second half if you're going to win a championship.
Agreed. And statistically, yes. Can he be a Dan Marino-type guy who puts up tremendous numbers, but because of any number of circumstances doesn't win a championship? Yeah, absolutely. You put Dan Marino in this day and age in the NFL, he's knocking on 6,000 yards without even blinking. It's just the way he, as good as he was. Never won a championship. One shot at it, and that was it. And that was early in his career, too. So is Mahomes going to be a Marino-type guy with ridiculous first-ballot Hall of Fame numbers? He shows that kind of talent. Is he going to be considered a Montana or a Brady or in those?
That's sort of out of his hands, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, he can control his play, but to your point, if Kansas City doesn't have a good defense, he's probably not going to win, as gaudy as his numbers may be.
Yeah, but again, how often have we, outside of the first three Super Bowls, we looked at defense. It was a different league. Defense was still a viable way to win championships. Since then, I'm not sure defenses are as important. You can have a top 10 defense in the league, and I'm only talking about scoring. I don't care about yards nowadays.
That's the number that Belichick said is the only one he cares about.
Not even a question. And the yards are fine. Teams are going to, because there's so many variables with yards. You know.
Well, and here especially, Belichick likes to exchange yards for seconds.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Get the yards. Time's ticking off, especially, you know, when they're up late. Yeah, go ahead.
Right.
Run between the 20s. We don't care.
Not even. And that's the other thing. If you're a team like Kansas City that's putting up big numbers offensively, you know, you might be playing the fourth quarter in a, not a prevent, but a relaxed defense in terms of what you'll give up. And that's going to skew your yardage numbers. Tell me about the points. That's all I want to know. And that's going to, if they can be a top 12 defensive team in terms of scoring, they got shots at championships. It's just the way it is in this day and age, and it's exciting and it's fun to watch.
I love watching him play.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a blast watching him. He'll do some things you'll be going, no. Oh, wow. That was great.
Right. The things that you've heard forever that are taboo for quarterbacks,
like
in the
NFL. Left-handed pass.
Throwing across your body to the other side of the field, rolling to your left and throwing to your right, throwing a sidearm pass, the other issue he may run into is starting to believe his own hype. You know, maybe that whole left-handed pass thing when he completed the first one, now all of a sudden it's like, I can do this, and no, not really.
See, I was thinking, and I don't know this to be true, but I thought when he did the first time and completed it, that Andy Reid or the offensive coordinator, they're in a meeting room, you know, on the Monday and said, hey, listen, you know, good for you. You pulled that. Don't do that again.
Right. Yeah. That's.
Wouldn't that be what a coach would say to a quarterback? Don't do that.
It would, but you're looking at a special kid right now. You're looking at a kid that does things that quarterbacks really haven't done. You know, the sidearm passes, the left-handed throws, the throwing it to a spot early. He's early in his career. He's throwing it to a spot that Brady didn't develop the ability to do for a number of years, in terms of putting the ball on the outside shoulder, putting the ball low and away. He's a very advanced quarterback for what's his second year now.
Yeah,
very advanced in terms of his throwing. But there are times when he has the arrogance of youth or whatever, thinking that, okay, I did it once, I can do it again. And it's not always, you know, you've got to pick your spots. He'll learn that, but he'll learn. He'll understand. And
might not know what he doesn't know yet.
Exactly right. The only way to learn that is the same way you learn how to ride a bike. It's the you try to avoid the pain by not, you know, when you fall off the bike, it hurts. Oh, I'm going to work hard not to fall off the next time. I think he's the real deal in terms of what he'll be capable of in terms of putting up numbers. And it'll be a lot of fun to watch, but the real test of the matter is eventually championships, and let's say you've got to at least put your team in a position to win one or so to be considered the greatest. Unless you just blow away the numbers like a Dan Marino, unless you just destroy the record books, you won't be put into the category of the greatest. But the kid can play. There's no doubt about it.
We return to a Falls Count Anywhere Friday with Dale and Keith right now on WEEI.
I have voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to
me. Oh, yeah, you can tell it's a Falls Count Anywhere Friday when you trot out the Randy Orton theme song. So the Patriots are in Pittsburgh Sunday. Tom Brady in his career is 11-2 against Pittsburgh, 8-2 in the regular season, 3-0 in the playoffs. In the regular season, he's got 25 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 111.8. In the playoffs, it's even better. He's 3-0, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 118.6.
Mm-hmm.
He's killed Mike Tomlin's defenses. I think he's 7-1 against Tomlin. And I guess the question I'd have if I were a Pittsburgh Steelers fan is, why will this one be different? Because I don't think it will be.
Because hope springs eternal, and they've played 3 poor games in the last 3 weeks, and there's no way they can keep playing that poorly. They've learned from their mistakes on how to finish games, and in this situation, the Patriots just came off a game where they couldn't finish it, and
Pittsburgh lost to Oakland. None of it's working for me.
Mike Tomlin, the mind of a Pittsburgh fan.
He's played the exact same defense against the Patriots.
Yep.
He hasn't changed anything up. Tom Brady knows everywhere they're going to be, every move they're going to make. He picks them apart. I don't see how this one's going to be any different, and especially if James Conner's unable to play and he hasn't even been able to practice so far this week.
Right, and you don't know what the status of Ben Roethlisberger
is. He'll play.
He's
kind of a baby about some of this stuff. Isn't some of this drama queen stuff?
Some of it, but a rib's the easiest thing, one of the easier things to shoot up and relieve the pain if it's that big a deal. They still do a little bit of that, but not much. And he came back, obviously, in the Oakland game to try to win it as the white knight on the steed that comes in to rescue his team. But the interception he threw to that nose tackle 2 weeks before that is just was as bad as I've seen a throw. That would have been intercepted.
I almost gave him a pass somewhat.
Yep.
In that the nose tackle got blown up.
Yep.
Got blown backwards 4
right.
feet. You know, probably shouldn't have been where he was, except for the fact that he got blown up by the offensive lineman.
Okay, let's say he didn't get blown up. Let's say he was just sitting there. Did you see the guy right behind the nose tackle?
Yeah,
he would have intercepted the ball.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't like he was throwing to an open receiver.
Yeah.
He was throwing to a guy. That ball would have been intercepted either way. They are a team that can do unbelievable things in terms of putting points on the board. But when you go deeper into their record, it's not nearly as impressive a record as you'd think. With some of the teams that they've beaten and some of the teams they've lost to, we're not talking about a great record. But again, you always have a certain level of scrubs in the league that you have to play anyway. But I know that they can put up points, and I know that the Patriots defense is not good on the road. The question is, can you hold the Steelers to 24, 27 points? Because I think you could probably put 30 up on them. But
well, especially if Connor can't play. Patriots run defense is not great.
But this defense is not good on the road at all. That's the issue. And now you've got now you're going and you were going against on the road. You weren't going against killer quarterbacks either. It's not like the cream of the crop was tying you up. It was Mariota and was it Stafford and some of the other guys. Roethlisberger can get hot, and he's got one of the best receiving tandems in the league.
Well, one guy especially. Antonio Brown, I think, is the best receiver in football.
Tremendous. And Smith is nothing to laugh at either. I mean, he's a very good player. You've got options. I mean, you've got options if you're a quarterback there. It's just there's something, just like we look at Miami, there's something about Pittsburgh that they look at the Patriots the same
way. See, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Yeah. We should have realized going into last Sunday that the Patriots are going to go to Miami and have a hard time.
Right.
Because they always have a hard time there.
Yep.
Now, even if we all agree that they should have won the game, all they had to do was make a tackle, all that stuff, you expect you're going to have issues. If I'm Pittsburgh, why do I think Sunday's going to be different than every other time this guy plays us? I mean, as I said, in his career, he's 11-2 against Pittsburgh.
Right.
Against Tomlin, he's 7-1. Why should it be different Sunday?
Well, there's questions down there now about...
And a healthy Patriots team, by the way.
There's questions down there now about Tomlin's leadership.
They've always been so undisciplined.
Yeah.
They've always done dumb things. By the way, he's done dumb things. That whole trying to trip a kick returner thing.
Yep.
Bill Belichick would have been drummed out of the league if he had done that.
Not even a question. Not even a question. They've been a very good franchise. But to say that the fish, rots from the head, I've talked to guys that cover the team down there. I've talked to guys that used to play for the team. There is a crisis of confidence there because they're not 100% sure he's that leader. But Pittsburgh does not change coaches. Pittsburgh Steelers hire a coach, and that guy stays for a long time. That's just the way
forever.
It is. That's...
But I do think this is the year. You're hearing more and more, even out of Pittsburgh.
Sure.
This stuff last weekend about, get your story straight.
Yep.
Could Ben have played? Could he have not have played? What do you mean it takes time for the shot to take? I mean, it sounded contrived and made up.
It really did.
Mark Madden, who's a talk show host in Pittsburgh, is saying, you know what? Maybe it's time to get rid of Mike Tomlin. Other guys have written it. Guys who have been big Tomlin and Steelers supporters,
sure,
like Ed Bouchette,
sure,
are saying, wait a minute, this story doesn't add up here.
No. That's the thing, though. It's the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers. When they hire a coach, they keep him forever. It was it Knoll and Cowher and then Tomlin after Cowher, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
But here's the thing. He's had enough success. We're not talking about a Marvin Lewis guy. We're not talking about what John Gruden's doing out there right now in Oakland. We're not talking about any of those number of coaches that they paraded through Buffalo. We're talking about a guy who's had some winning records, who's won two Super Bowls or one Super Bowl? One Super Bowl,
one.
I think. And we're talking about who's...
And has missed the playoffs like three or four times.
He has, but in how many years? I mean, you look around the NFL. You tell me you're going to make the playoffs two-thirds of the time. I they'll take that, I mean, even half the time. The teams will step up and say, I'll take playoffs half the time.
Stephen A. Smith was talking about this earlier this week, and he basically made it a race issue. Stephen A. Smith basically said, if you're suggesting that Mike Tomlin, should be fired at the end of this season, it's because he's a black coach in the NFL.
Isn't that a little early to play the race card on this
not
thing?
For some people, no. It's never too soon.
Yeah, first off, it's not – the Steelers have not come out and said anything. Tom has not come out and said anything. That's kind of a weak argument.
Well, by Stephen A. Smith's logic, Mike Tomlin, Marvin Lewis can never be fired, right?
Sometimes I'm considered a polarizing figure because I'm going to say things that other people didn't say. I ain't going to give a damn about it.
Well, I guess Hugh Jackson, was that an issue? I mean, should he not have been fired? Was that a race issue?
Yes, he should have been fired.
Was that a race issue? I mean,
And by the way, the only way I would say Mike Tomlin should be fired is if And right now, they've got the lead in the AFC right. North, barely, over Baltimore.
Right.
If they don't make the playoffs...
You can make a case for it.
Yes.
You can make a case for it. The other thing is that there's pressure around the league to get that next new young guy.
The next Sean McVay.
Yeah, or even Nagy, or you know, who's having success in Chicago. You know,
Anthony Lynn.
Anthony Lynn. Although Lynn's 48, 40. He was with the Jets for a while, too. But again, that's...
Young in terms of head coaching experience.
And in terms of the thought process, and in terms of the aggressiveness, and in terms of, making his team play at a higher level than they're capable of. It's talent-wise that they're capable of. That might be something that these owners are looking at now, or the GMs are looking at now. Who's that next guy? Who's that next young offensive hotshot that's going to light the NFL on fire like Sean McVay did? There's pressure there, but Pittsburgh does things differently. Just like the Patriots do things differently, Pittsburgh does things differently. There's a few organizations that have a different way of doing things. Pittsburgh is certainly one of them. And if he makes the playoffs, even if he's one and done in the playoffs, I can't see him leaving. That would be, I don't know, considering some of the guys.
There have been more question marks about him this year than I can remember.
Sure.
More criticism in the press. More talk in Pittsburgh about, hey, you know what? If this doesn't work out this year, maybe it's time.
Yeah, you could see it happening because they haven't been. Although they've been competitive, they haven't been playoff competitive for and it's one of those things where eventually someone's going to have to take a fall. But they're also going to look around. Pittsburgh's another organization looks around and say, okay, what's better? What's out there that's better? And are we willing to take a chance on somebody? Somebody took a chance on Sean McVay. Somebody took a chance on Nagy. I mean, they probably, covered their bets on that. But still, it was, it was one of those things where you've got to find a better replacement.
All right, let's get to the calls with you guys. 617-779-7937. Daron Harmon after the top of the hour. Michael Irvin just after 1 o'clock. Mike in North Providence, you're up first on Sports Radio's Dale and Keefe.
Hi, guys. I'm calling about Cordarrelle Patterson, but just a quick note, Dale. I don't watch much ESPN, but I actually watched Stephen A. Smith basically say that Marvin Lewis should have been fired years ago. So, I mean, he is not, like, defending all black coaches.
No, but he did say this week that if you're going after Mike Tomlin, it's because he's a black coach.
I'm just saying, but you brought Marvin Lewis into it.
I wasn't saying Stephen A. said that. My point was, does that mean Marvin Lewis can never be fired? By the same logic, or as Steve said, Hugh Jackson can't be fired.
Okay,
but here's the main difference. All right, Tomlin, I'm pretty sure has a winning record when it comes to this stuff. I'm not sure Marvin Lewis or Hugh. I know Hugh Jackson didn't have it. That's the difference there. That's the flat out. And we said that also. We also said that this guy has a resume better than most head coaches. So
yeah, good point.
Yeah, but again, there's also higher standards in Pittsburgh than there are in Cincinnati or Cleveland now. There's much higher standards there. They're used to competing for a championship.
Okay. With regards to Cordarrelle Patterson, I'm just saying he's like kind of like fitting into this whole like he's like a Bill Belichick style guy that we've seen for years, like, a guy that can wear multiple hats. And it's not just that he's an all-pro kick returner or that they're expanding his role in the offense with their receiving. But he's also kind of almost like, he uses him in the running game as an end around. He's like the emergency power back. Now he's getting involved in kick coverage. It's one of these things where it's not just an aesthetic thing for Bill. This comes down to roster moves going forward. If he can have a guy that can do a lot of different things, that allows him to say, you know what, I can use this roster spot to have like kind of a platoon at a certain position. Because I've watched him over the years, like to get the production that one $12 million player will give you, he'll use two $3 million guys. And one guy will be better in run coverage and the other guy's better in pass coverage. And, it's that sort of mentality. I think that when he looks at somebody like Patterson, he can use a lot of different ways. It has like far-reaching implications.
Look, and you're right, that's a classic Belichick move. He's done that forever. Guys like Troy Brown and, Here's a defensive playbook in your locker to go with that offensive playbook right. as well. And, oh, by the way, you're a punt returner, too. He loves guys like that.
Sure.
And it is a roster management thing. If you've got a guy who can give you several – look, for every Bill Belichick team, the more you can do, the more valuable you are to him.
No doubt. And he's been that way since I first met him. And it's not. And the thing is, he will find a way if he thinks that you're first off coachable, first off that football is important to you, second off that you're coachable. And usually one usually leads into the other, and that you'll do whatever it takes to help your team win. Now, that's how you get a guy that might not be as, I don't know, universally considered talented as some of the other guys. That's how a guy like that can fit into a team and help his team win. He's done it repeatedly, nonstop. And the guys, and you can see, first and foremost, the two main examples of guys that were being wasted by other teams. When Rob Ninkovich and Mike Vrabel, those are two guys that were pretty good contributors to some very, very good Patriots teams, and they were being underutilized.
Yeah.
In for Nick, I think it was New Orleans and Miami, and for Vrabel it was Pittsburgh, I believe. He's done that.
He saw something that other organizations didn't see in those guys.
How did you not see that Vrabel, Nick, I could see Nick wasn't, I don't know if he was as highly recruited out of college, looked at out of college as Vrabel was. Vrabel was considered a pretty good player coming out of college. Nick worked his way into it and became a very good player for the Patriots. But how do you not see what a guy does well and try to work that into your defense? That's the other thing. I know firsthand his Bill Belichick's defenses are never so written in stone that he can't adjust things and work things and figure out ways to take a guy's limited skill select set and make it work for them. He did it with me at the New York Giants. The last thing he ever wanted me to have to do was cover a tight end or cover a back out of the backfield, but he absolutely wanted me in there when he thought they were going to run the ball. I could do that very well. That wasn't the issue. But if I'm already running to the sideline on third down, I'm not even thinking about it. I don't care if it's third and three or third and 23. I'm not in on third down. It's just the way it was. He will take a guy and make his defense isn't so rigid that he can't find a way to use someone's skills. And on an even bigger level, you're talking about with the minor adjustments he had to make so I could contribute to his defenses. He made some adjustments that with guys like Vrabel and Ninkovich that they were able to use that skill set, and we've seen it time and time. And those are just the two names that come to the top of my head. I'm sure there's others.
617-779-7937. Eric's calling from work. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you. So my question was, not who got more trouble in their day, but I was wondering, who do you guys, just in your guys' opinions, who do you think was a badder man back in the day, Ben Roethlisberger or Michael Vick?
Is that something you're aspiring to? Do you want to be a worse person?
I don't know.
The Pittsburgh Steeler defenders would tell you that Ben Roethlisberger was never proven. That there were charges, but there wasn't anything concrete. In Michael Vick's case, he was charged, tried, convicted, served his time. From a legal perspective, Michael Vick's worse. He went to prison.
Right. That's
Ben didn't go to prison. Now, what Ben was alleged to have done is worse, in my opinion.
Agreed.
But they're going to say, hey, nothing was ever proven. He wasn't convicted. He didn't go to trial.
Sure. Sure, and again, you could make a very simple case that way, but we all have seen how certain things are. We're not saying it did, it was, or whatever, but either way, we're talking about things and people that you just don't want to be involved with.
I don't want to be around anyway.
Back on a Patriots Friday with Dale and Keith on WEEI.
(617) 779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. Talking football on a Patriots Friday. Steve DiAsi in for my buddy Rich Keefe, who's got the day off today. And, of course, talking a lot about the Pittsburgh Steelers and Patriots game coming up Sunday at 4:25. With the Kansas City loss last night, all of a sudden the first seed in the AFC is within play again, despite what happened last Sunday. course, if you had won last Sunday, you'd be in first place in the AFC today, which is the thing that drives some people nuts. But it's now back, at least in the realm of possibility, if not probability. You've got to win out, and that starts Sunday in Pittsburgh. Let's talk now with New England Patriots defensive back Daron Harmon. Our conversation with Daron is brought to you by the New England Kubota Tractor Dealers. Daron, it's Dale and Steve DiAssi. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yourself, guys?
We're doing great, thank you. How long does it take you to get over the pain of what happened last Sunday?
It definitely lingered around for a day or two, but when you're going into a game week facing the Steelers with the explosive offense that they have, knowing that it's a game that both sides want to win, it's kind of easy to move on, because we know the longer that we stay worried about what happened against Miami, the less prepared we're going to be for this game coming up on us on Sunday.
So is that basically a team-wide philosophy, or is that filtered down from the top?
It's a team-wide philosophy, because we know it's at stake. I mean, the good thing about the regular season, you always have a game the next week, you know. So the more that you focus on the past week, the less you're prepared for the new week. And we have a new opportunity this week. We have an opportunity to go into a hostile environment to – go against a team who's back against the wall as well. I mean, they lost their last three games. So they're going to be coming out firing on all cylinders, because they don't want to lose either. So it's going to just be a battle. It's going to be a battle out there for who wants to be the winner on Sunday around 7:45, 8 o'clock.
I don't know if they're the best wide receiving duo in the NFL, but they're in the top two or three with Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. What's your biggest concern when you look at those guys on film?
They're both just really dynamic. I mean, you go and watch the film where guys have, you know, tried to double Antonio Brown the home game, and then that's the game where Schuster goes crazy, you know, two touchdowns, 100-plus yards. Or you look at the game where they just try to play straight, and that's the game where Antonio Brown goes crazy and does what he's been doing for the last 6-7 years. So, I mean, it's so much that goes into how you want to play those guys, because both of them are so dynamic. They're great playmakers. They catch the ball well. But then another thing that they do well is run with the ball well. Both of them have tremendous run-after-catch plays, and we know we got to get to them, tackle them, and play competitive coverage on them, because at the end of the day, man, when you're dealing with those two and Ben Roethlisberger, we know they're going to make some plays, because I mean, they're a great offense with great offensive coordinator, great quarterback, and great skill. So we just have to do a good job of just staying level-headed throughout the whole game and just being able to focus on what we have to focus on, and just try to play good football.
How does Roethlisberger look to you compared to years past?
He looks the same. I mean, he's big, he's strong, he has a big arm, has great touch on the ball. At times where you think you got him down, he gets out of there, scrambles around, and then finds one of his receivers down the field on a scramble play for a 60-yard touchdown. So, I mean, he's been playing well. We know what to expect from him. I mean, he's a tough guy. He's going to get the ball to his receiver. He's going to do everything in his power to make sure that his team gets a win on Sunday, and we got to do the same.
I don't imagine, no matter what the injury report says, you gave it a second of thought that he wouldn't be playing this Sunday.
Oh, not at all. I mean, that guy's a tough guy. Great competitor. Somebody who I love going against, because he's going to bring the best out of you, because you know he's going to come ready with his A game, so you got to make sure you come ready with yours. And that's not even just him in general. That's just the whole Pittsburgh Steelers organ tough task force to go in there and get a win on Heinz Field this Sunday.
Ron, your team's play, your defense in particular, has played a lot better at home. What's going on the road? The road doesn't seem to be as productive defensively for you guys.
Man, I wish if I really knew, I would do whatever I can to help and change it. But for whatever reason, it's something that we're working on. I mean, it's obviously not anybody in Pacific. I think it just has to go back to us. Just playing football the way that we coach and know how to play. I mean, I think you look at the Miami game, that first half we struggled a bit. Really couldn't stop them, but in the fourth quarter, obviously besides, you know, the last play, we did a good job of holding them. And so we just got to make sure that we start the game that way rather than waiting all the way into the fourth quarter to play good defense.
Deron, we appreciate the time as always. Good luck on Sunday.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Take care. Thanks, that is New England Patriot safety Deron Harmon. I will say this, and one thing that he's right about, and you'd know better than I would having played the game, there may not be a tougher quarterback to get to the ground than Ben Roethlisberger, is there? I mean, he is just so big and so thick. And
yeah, and he's got strong legs. You can see sometimes that guys are bouncing off his hips and legs when they think you've got him down. He's what, 6'5", 6'6"? He's got to be, they list him at 240, but he's probably closer to 260.
And I don't mean, there are other quarterbacks who are much more elusive,
right,
much faster. I'm just talking about when you've got him in the grasp,
right,
getting him on the ground is hard.
Absolutely right. And there's been a few times where you thought they would stop the play with him being in the grasp. But it's happened against the Patriots a couple times where you thought, okay, you should have heard a whistle by now. And he finds a way to get out of it and roll out one way or the other and make the play. He's not fast. He's not elusive. He just sees. He's one of those rare quarterbacks that can see the field down. He can see downfield and feel and see what's going on around him. He does a great job of it.
Let's get back to the calls at 617-779-7937. Jeremy's in Southbridge. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Not much. I'm a long-time fan. Been listening for years. I've never been more frustrated as a Patriots fan in my entire life.
Never.
They blew it. They utterly blew it in Miami.
So you've been watching for what, 18 years?
Is this just me, or is this kind of like deja vu? The same thing happened 2 years ago. They had it. They went to Miami and they choked it, and they had to go to Denver on the road in the playoffs, and they couldn't handle it.
It's their nemesis. It happens. There's countless examples of teams that. What about Pittsburgh? Who's Pittsburgh nemesis? New England, of course, but New England's a great team, so it's not a fair comparison. But
right.
There's just certain things that happen certain ways. There were times in way back when I'm with the Giants, and we could beat Washington just by showing up. Washington could beat Philadelphia just by showing up, and Philadelphia could beat us just by showing up. It was the weirdest thing. There's just strange situations that happen, and some of them are coincidence, and some of them are for real. But to say this is the most frustrating Patriots team you've ever seen, you've got to be. How long have you been watching now?
I'm 21 now. I've been watching since probably 2007.
So I can understand that. Then you're probably right.
We've seen more frustrating things than you have.
2008. How about 2008? 2008 was pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
11-5. You don't make the playoffs.
Your quarterback gets blown up in the first quarter of the first game.
Right.
Yeah. But you're seeing mediocre quarterbacks absolutely shred this defense. Like Ryan Tannehill is a bum. I'm sorry. He's going to be out of the league in 5 years.
Well paid bum.
I don't think he's
5 years. 5 years. We'll give him a 12-13 year career.
Backup quarterback.
Yeah.
It's frustrating watching these guys absolutely torture.
Agreed. I agree.
On the road in the playoffs, they're in trouble.
Jeremy, you are so spoiled as a sports fan.
Good for you.
In your long, hard 21 years of being a sports fan,
to start watching sports around 2007. I had the Celtics. I had the Red Sox.
Yeah.
It's an incredible experience.
It has been.
You know,
and I could see how you'd be frustrated. I get it. This doesn't look like the Patriots teams that we've seen in the past, but. We've also seen those Patriots teams surprise us here and there, too.
Al's in Framingham. Hey, Al, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing great.
I just have one question. Why do you think they never went for a two-point conversion? That really bothered me in this game.
When did you want them to go? The last touchdown they scored was in the first half.
Right. Why didn't they go for a two-point conversion? That's my point.
No need to at that point.
They just seem like they were playing from behind.
You don't need to at that point. You had 21 points in the first half?
Mm-hmm.
21 points in the first half leads you to believe you're probably going to score another minimum 10 to 14 in the second half. You're not really worried about that 2-point play at that point. You're just not. It would, again, retrospect, sure, go ahead, that's fine. But bottom line is, not very many coaches would. It's just not an imperative play, and it's not something that numbers-wise really matters.
Al, coaches call it chasing points, yep. And almost no coach in the NFL is going to chase those points at that point of the game.
I don't know. That to me was just, I don't know. That whole thing just bothered me. When he missed that extra point,
How often do you see coaches do that? How often do you see coaches in the first half try to make up for a missed extra point? I'll answer for you. Not often.
I understand your point, but you're right. Playing Miami, your nemesis. So.
Okay, so you change things that you do because you're scared of Miami?
No, just to... It just felt like they were playing from behind.
Is it also fair to say, Al, that if somebody, anybody, had made a tackle on the last play, it wouldn't have mattered to you?
True.
How'd you feel when there were 7 seconds left and 69 yards to go? How'd you feel?
I thought they were going to win like everybody else.
So did we, too.
You weren't worried about the 2 points then, were you?
It's just that, and I understand, in hindsight, yes. You go, oh, man. Look, in hindsight, Steven Gostkowski can't pick that point. Right. That moment to miss his first extra point kick of the year.
It's a fact. I've been correct 84% of the time using hindsight.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
So, only 84.
Yeah.
Hey, I would think it would
That's not good enough? No? Okay.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Michael Irvin will join us just after 1 o'clock. Steve DeAssi's in the house. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.